Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, the test went for it.
Yeah, the diagnosis is a broken fibula, and it won't require surgery. However, it typically takes about 6 months to heal fully and recover from. So the best free safety in the game is out for the season. It was a little bit emotional for him, kind of sent some innocuous tweets after the injury referring to whether he's contemplating retirement or not, which sent this entire 206 area into a tailspin, myself included. But I think that as his emotions have, kind of subsided a little bit, that he understands what's going on here. It's part of the game, and what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So we'll be without Big Earl for this playoff run. Gary thought.
So you were worried a couple weeks ago about losing them just during a regular season road game. Losing him for the month of December heading into the playoffs. What's your confidence level on that the LOB and that Seahawks defense to now stop the pass over the middle of the field? Because as you see, as soon as Thomas went out, we didn't know what the injury was, but as soon as Thomas went out, Cam Newton, and we all know he's not having the best of seasons here, but Cam Newton was able to capitalize on a big touchdown play over the middle, right where Earl Thomas would have been. What's your confidence level now moving forward?
I would say that it's down about 20%, Cam. I mean, our schedule looks favorable in the sense that our toughest game is probably against the Packers at Green Bay. We end the season with the Rams and the Cards coming up here and then going down to Frisco, so hopefully that's a trifecta that we get those 3 out of 4 games. But any slip-ups and all of a sudden Detroit's in the picture, Tampa Bay, if they're able to do some things and jump into the picture, I don't think they will. But, it's just a matter of that number 2 seed becomes imperative. And like you said, I think Steve Farrell's a good guy. I think that he plays really good fundamental defense with regards to where he's supposed to be. But, without the difference maker back there, the defense looks way different and it's vulnerable. And, I don't know if the offense can catch up quickly enough to sustain the loss that the defense is going to give up. So my confidence is down about 20%.
Wow, so that's a big change. So we're going to have to do a rankings here pretty soon of where you rank the top NFC teams, and just by the way you sound, it looks like they dropped a couple notches there.
I still think that they're number two, but the three through six look a lot more formidable than they did before Earl Thomas got hurt.
Okay. Well, we had another safety step up, have an emotional game, an emotional game when he played, in fact. And that was when the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Atlanta Falcons in the game when he played the first was that the block two, the block extra point?
The interception on the 3-point conversion.
Okay,
right.
It was the interception on the 2-point conversion. That was Eric Berry got the 2-point conversion interception, and so the pick two for the game winner. Well, what a play, man! Did you enjoy that play? I enjoyed that play actually.
Oh, that was incredible. I mean, you know, we saw the block kick a few weeks ago in New Orleans get run back to lose the game, and, you know, to see the interception. I mean, I know Eric Berry's fast and all, but I think the Falcons could have given a little bit more effort trying to stop that man from getting that 2-point conversion. But dramatic come from behind victory. It certainly helps the Seahawks out with regards to the Falcons losing ground. So. You know, and making the NFC South just that much more competitive. So, yeah, big win for them. Happy to see Eric Berry come back home where he got his cancer treatment at and, you know, put on a show for the hometown fans.
And you know, talking about putting on a show, we have the football savant down there in Central Florida. He takes his boys, travels across the country, head north a little bit, actually, to play your up and down San Diego Superchargers. and he outdueled them. James Winston, I'm talking about, outdueled your boy Phillips Rivers for victory. Bucks cross the country and pound the bolts. What's your thoughts on James Winston now, sir?
I'm shocked. I mean, I got to give him his props, man. I mean, he's got a team with not a whole lot of talent around him to 7-5, you know, tied for the division lead with little or no running game, really just one superstar receiver and a, you know, better than average tight end. He's making plays when he has to make plays, man. And, I mean, can't take anything away from him. I mean, he's beaten a very formidable opponent in the Seahawks at their home. He's beaten a formidable opponent in the Chargers. They're definitely doing some things, and you know, I can't talk bad about them anymore. Top 15,
yeah,
for sure.
That was definitely a couple of impressive wins here. Jameson, he just keeps getting better. And imagine if he actually had some talent around him, what they'd actually do. The Vikings. The Detroit Lions take a division lead. When's the last time we've been able to say the Detroit Lions leading the division this late in the season? But it is. Golden Tate and Matthew Stafford, the combination that makes people cringe in Seattle, I'd imagine.
Very much so. I mean, you know, we wouldn't be all that eager to see the Detroit Lions, you know, come to town necessarily. You know, they've been winning a lot of come-from-behind games, which is kind of odd to be trailing in the fourth quarter of, I believe, all of their victories. So they definitely stick with you and don't let you get too far away from them. I guess this last game, they wasn't a come-from-behind victory. But, no, as far as their team, it's hard to really figure out what makes them good. You know, the receivers are pretty average. And Golden Tate, Anquan Boldin, and Barnes Jones.
The receivers are average? Is that what you said?
Yeah, their receivers are average.
Okay. If their receivers are average, what do you call your receivers in Seattle?
Oh, I would definitely put my receivers ahead of the Detroit Lions receivers. You got to be kidding me. Are you being serious? Anquan Boldin, Marvin Jones, Golden Tate.
Golden Tate alone is better than any receiver on the Seattle Seahawks. Golden Tate alone.
Okay. Okay. I'm gonna send a tape recording of this show to Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett right now. Because that's just blasphemy.
So why don't you set up a meeting and I'll tell them to their face. Golden Tate is better than either one of those, either receiver on the Seahawks team, including the Lockett, the rookie. He's better than any one of them alone. Anquan Boldin, he's on the backside of his career. We can say that he's had a better career than any other Seattle Seahawks receiver.
Oh, we certainly could say that. If this was 2006, he would definitely be on that list.
Yeah, Marvin Jones.
But it's not.
Marvin Jones, it is what it is. So I'd say Golden Tate alone with the three receivers, Anquan Boldin and Marvin Jones, makes that a better receiving corps than the Seattle Seahawks, no?
I don't think so.
Oh, my goodness. Come on. I'm
not scared of him, man.
You wouldn't rather have Golden Tate than any receiver that you have now?
I don't think I would rather have Golden Tate than Doug Baldwin right now. If you would ask me that question when Golden Tate left, the answer would be Golden Tate. But seeing what Doug Baldwin's been able to accomplish and where, Golden Tate has, fallen to, I would have to go with Doug Baldwin right now.
Where Golden Tate has fallen to? Where is he falling?
He is not the big-time number one receiver that he self-proclaimed to be. Golden Tate's numbers are very, very average, very ordinary. Nothing to write home about here.
I sense some bitterness. I actually sense a lot of bitterness. Golden Tate was the number one receiver here in Seattle. When he got ceremoniously shipped out of town because they're not a passing team, they're more of a running team, and they want to focus on getting Marshawn Lynch the ball and not having a good receiver out there, a talented receiver out there, whining about not catching the ball, which would have been the case. Now that they've morphed into a receiving team, I don't even know why I'm having this debate, Doug Baldwin, and Curse against Golden Tate. I've said enough. Well, I spent too much time on that conversation, on that debate right there. I already spent too much time on that. That's not even close. Not even close. If there was a draft today, if there was a draft 5 years ago, Golden Tate would have went before either one of the receivers then. He would go before either one of the receivers today or tomorrow or next week. That's not even close. Let's move on. Cleveland had the trifecta last week. He couldn't he can't sign prosperity, so I came back and beat him this week. The picks, 11 out of 8. Three of my picks, I got 3 out of 3 on the picks against the spread. Gave me a lead in the picks. I think I actually had the lead in the confidence picks as well. Well, 14 to 13, led by points. You had New Orleans winning the game against Detroit. And we see what happened. I actually had Minnesota winning, and we see they got trounced. The game we differed on is Miami and Baltimore. I had Baltimore winning that game. Atlanta, KC. Atlanta was in prime position to win that game. KC pulled it out in the end. I had Chicago over San Francisco. We both were wrong. The Bengals stepped up and got a W. Is this Marvin Lewis last season in Cincinnati, do you think?
I don't think so. I think that he's gets a pass with regards to how many injuries they've had over there and how much influx they've had within their coordinating system. I just don't think they have the heart to do it, not this season.
You don't think they had the heart to do it, huh?
I don't think they have the heart to do it.
All right, well, it looks like your boy Tyrod Taylor has a heart to get a W as they falter, let Oakland travel across the country to go beat them in Buffalo. What's up with your boy Tyrod Taylor, your guy?
Tyrod is my guy. And, they were up 24-9 going into the third quarter. So I don't really think that's something that you put on that you put on Tyrod necessarily. I think that's something you got to talk with the defense with regards to what they're trying to accomplish. Yeah, that's certainly a big enough cushion to sustain. He's just now getting some of his receivers.
You don't score in the second half? You can't score in the second half?
They had some issues on offense. They had some drop balls. I'm not going to put it all on Tyrod Taylor. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right. You seem to like make a lot of convenient excuses for that guy. Who you got to win the
NFC? Well, yeah, I don't know. They're one game behind the Dolphins in the AFC. So.
I'm sorry?
I was just saying that the Buffalo Bills, they're one game behind the Miami Dolphins in the AFC East for second place. I was just saying.
They're one game what?
They're one game behind the Miami Dolphins for second place in the AFC East. That's all I was saying.
So that means they're in third place. They're behind the Dolphins. Okay. As a lot of teams will be here in the near future. NFC North champions, division champions, who's that going to be? You got more confidence in the Detroit Lions and Golden Tate or Matt Stafford and the Minnesota Vikings?
I have more confidence in Matt Stafford and the Detroit Lions than I do in Sam Bradford and the Minnesota Vikings. I just don't see with the way their offensive line looks and their lack of a running game that they're going to put themselves in a position to win that. Now, the flip side of that is their defense has been playing lights out. And down the stretch, I mean, that may make the difference. Their schedule isn't overly difficult. Games against the Jaguars, the Colts, and the Bears. So, that's interesting. I still think that the Detroit Lions have been fairly fortunate to win a lot of very close games. I don't know how long you can do that and still come out victorious. But again, the more I think about it and the more I look at it, I've changed my mind midstream here. I do think that the Minnesota Vikings will have enough to retain and regain the lead there in the NFC North.
Oh, my goodness. The hate and the disdain for Golden Tate and the Lions is just growing at an increasingly at a rapid rate. You didn't even know you had this in you, did you? You didn't even know the disdain for the Detroit Lions.
You know what?
I didn't know
the level of the objectiveness that I have with regards to what it is that I think is going to happen. I took a look at both of the schedules. I assessed both of the teams, their strengths and weaknesses, and after throwing it all in the hopper, spitting it out, I came to the conclusion. I went against my original assessment.
You've been hating on the Vikings all season long. And here with a month to go in the season, you say the Vikings are – Sam Bradford is going to have enough to pull the season out. Boy, I tell you what. The hate, buddy, I tell you. And I only can think that has something to do with Golden Tate in his production. But we'll see. I'm in agreement with you. I think the Vikings can hold on. The Lions have you're right, winning six games from coming from behind. That does show your resiliency. However – how long is that sustainable life there? We'll see how that continues. I will pick the Vikings. I think Sam Bradford is going to get it together, and he's going to finish the season strong. Next question is, how resilient can the Seahawks be? We talked about it a little earlier, your confidence level dropping with the injury to Earl Thomas, and that's understandable. But with the replacements, and can they – can Chancellor settle down and become a better pass defender and help out the passing defense, or are they going to be in trouble with the whole that Earl Thomas leaves behind?
There's going to be a period of adjustments, and unfortunately for them, they don't have enough time for it to get really drastic. Maybe they give up an extra, 5 or 6 points a game, but nothing you know, much beyond that. I think that the personnel that they have with regards to the playmakers are just going to have to do a little bit more than they're used to doing. I think a left pass rush is definitely going to have to step
up. What playmakers were you speaking of, sir? Just real quickly.
On the defensive side of the ball, definitely going to have to see a little bit more from Frank Clark, although he's having a pretty good year. Going to have to see a little bit more from Mr. Bennett. I know he just had his first game back, but they're going to have to provide some pass rush with regards to kind of making up for the ground that Earl Thomas covered. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, Doug Baldwin's going to need to step up a tad bit, you know, and become that all-pro receiver that we all know that he's capable of being. Jimmy Graham is going to have to be, a little bit targeted more. And in addition, we have to do something with Thomas Rawls with regards to getting that running game and establishing that running game. Did a pretty good job last week. Just got to keep it going.
Okay, well, we'll see how that works out. We'll keep a close eye on you guys moving forward. As the wins were piling up, I personally watched Mr. Tannehill in the last 6 minutes of a game. I personally watched it, and I'm not going to come off, but I personally watched magic that he generated out in Los Angeles. I think he was 10 for 11 in the last 5 minutes of the game against the Los Angeles Rams, scored 14 points to actually win the game with the game-winning touchdown, not a field goal to tie the game, but a game-winning touchdown. He drove the game down. But week after week, man, this guy proves he's probably maxed out. He's probably giving us all he has. When the team gets trounced as they did last week against the Ravens, I mean, he did some things that are just inexcusable for a five-year quarterback. I mean, throwing the ball behind a receiver who's wide open by NFL standards, I mean, those things just don't get it done in the red zone. Those things just don't add up to victories. And sadly to say, I think Ryan Tannehill has maxed out. And your feedback, please.
Wow, what a difference a day makes. I mean, it seems like only yesterday that I was having to bite and claw over statements that Ryan Tannehill was not an elite quarterback. I got cussed out for saying, I think, Marcus Mariota was better than this guy. And it's just a one game later, he's maxed out, he's garbage, and he's done. There's no more we can do with the kid. This is as far as he's going to go. This is as good as he's going to get. And that just ain't good enough, damn it. That's a fall from grace right there. I mean, that's a hard fall from grace. From elite. I can't do nothing with you. I mean, it's a game. It one game later. Whew.
Sometimes things happen. You just see some things that just as a quarterback, you use your cadence to get the defensive line to jump. When you get the defensive line to jump, you have an advantage. Most times you're running a play, you get a free play in essence. Aaron Rodgers does a fantastic job of running this, getting the defensive line to jump. They have a free play. He throws it 70 yards in the air, giving his receivers a chance to make a play, to get hail, to have a pass interference so they can move the ball down the field. Ryan Tannehill draws the defender offline, and he throws the ball to the running back in the flat. Come on, dude. The gain some yardage, positive yards is what we need. I don't think you can be taught those things. Obviously you can't be taught those things. He hasn't learned in 5 years. And that's what's just driving me bananas. And the winning streak, I had a tight lip. I saw some things that had me concerned, but they were winning, and he actually drove the team down to for wins, which was very exciting to see. But what I've seen, just what I see week after week, I see reasons that he's not the guy. So yes, that was a good change. As we stated,
okay,
it was 14-13 last week. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask a quick question. So if the Dolphins don't make the playoffs this year, is this the end of the Ryan Tannehill era?
I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I gave you a list of players that if I could, I'd take over Ryan Tannehill tomorrow, mid-season, in the playoff push. I take that list of quarterbacks ahead of Ryan Tannehill. That being said, if they don't make the playoffs, the experiment is over. Now, I credit Gase for putting them on a winning streak. He's statistically having the best and most efficient season he's had in his years. And I credit that to Adam Gase for kind of changing the game plan, changing the focus. However, I just don't see the hunger, the drive of a championship-type quarterback who – goes after defenders. I don't see it. I see too many passes in the flat. I see too many two-yard routes. I see too many third and 12 when he throws a three-yard route. What are you doing? If you not have confidence in yourself, do you not have confidence in your teammates? Do you not have confidence in the game plan? What the hell are you doing? It's third and 13. You throw a three-yard route. What's the objective here, sir? So for me, in my opinion, yes. It would be the end of the experiment, Ronnie Tannehill experiment, yes.
Okay. Well, these four games
are critical. So we got some good games coming up this week. What I'm looking forward to this week is to see how the Seahawks overcome their yet another injury. Want to see the Raiders and the Chiefs tomorrow night. I got Raiders winning that game. You got KC, so that would be a good game. The Vikings versus the Falcons, that ought to be another good game. Both of these guys are playing for the playoff lives, actually. Well, that's not right, actually. We want to see the Vikings game and the Falcons game. They're not playing each other. The Vikings are playing the Jaguars. The Rams are playing the Falcons. And then we have the Seahawks and the Packers. And we're going to see how Seattle survives. Their passing game survives against Aaron Rodgers and that guy and the bad man that he is. What are you looking to see this weekend?
Well, in addition to see what life looks like without Earl Thomas on a permanent basis, at least for this season, I'm also looking forward to seeing this Cowboys-Giants game to see if the Dak Prescott Express can keep on rolling. I mean, this is a pretty big game with regards to not really the NFC East necessarily, but for that wild card to see if the Giants can maintain their lead in the wild card race. But it's going to be a tough task to go to Meadowlands and pull that one out.
Well, the Cowboys have revenge on them, so I actually think the Cowboys are going to win, and they will definitely beat the spread, actually, of the 3.5, because they're coming on a revenge. And this is their second time around. I don't think the Giants are that good on defense that they're going to rebound against the Dez Bryant and Dak Prescott on their second time around. I got a Cowboy victory there. Once again, man, thank you guys for taking time during your holiday season to listen to the show. Thanks, Cleveland, for participating in another fantastic week. We got another few weeks before the end of the year, so hope your fantasy teams are doing well. Cleveland, enjoy the holiday season with your wife, man, and we'll talk to you next week.
Right on, bro. We'll talk soon.
All right, my man. Later.